理课堂听 class.com。
Model Test 14. Section A. Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, 1 or more questions will be asked about what was said. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once.After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center. Now let's begin with the 8 short conversations.
Question 11.Hi, Mike. Do you know the philosophy class next Monday has been replaced by a geography class?
Oh, it's terrible. I have previewed every subject but that one.
Which class hasn't the man prepared for?
Question 12. Everyone seems to be on a diet. Have you noticed that?
Yes. A neighbor of mine is on a banana diet. She eats a banana for breakfast, a banana for lunch, and 2 bananas for dinner. Yet she doesn't look any thinner.
What can we learn about the woman's neighbor?Question 13.
Can you go over my math with me? I couldn't understand all these formula.
You know, there are review lessons which are being held every night this week. They're supposed to be good.
What does the man suggest the woman do?
Question 14. I hope you can understand my reasons for deciding to leave this company. I do need to get a more challenging job.
But I have to remind you that we have spent a lot of time and money on your career here.
How did the woman react to the man's remarks?
Question 15. I'm not used to heavy reading load. So many seminars and so many papers to write.
As everything is presented in English, you may find it difficult to follow at the beginning.
What does the man think of the woman's problem is?Question 16. I've forgotten my bank book, but I want to know if I can make a deposit right now.
No problem. Just bring this receipt and your bank book with you next time, then we will adjust the balance.
Where does this conversation most probably take place?Question 17.
Come on, Tanya. You shouldn't be so serious about your grades. You're missing the point of student life.
Well, perhaps you're the one missing the point of college if you think that good grades grow on trees.
What does the woman mean? Question 18. Oh, I'm sorry, Marissa. You're the only one left in the dorms. Do you want to go out and do something tonight?
Absolutely. I've been dying for some company.
What do we know about the woman?
Now you'll hear two long conversations. Conversation 1.
I really appreciate your filling in on yesterday's lecture.
No problem. I thought you might want to go over it together. And anyway, it helps me review. Hope you're feeling better now.
I am, thanks. So, you said she talked about squid. Sounds a little strange.
Well, actually, it was about the evolution of sea life, a continuation from last week. The octopus and the squid descended from earlier creatures with shells. They survived by shedding their shells, somewhere between 200 and 500 million years ago.
That's a pretty long span of time.
I know. That's what she said, though. To be precise, exactly when they emerged is uncertain, and why is it still unexplained?
Some squid are really huge. Can you imagine something that big if it still had a shell?
Actually, it's because they lost their shells that they could evolve to a bigger size.
Makes sense. But some are really huge. I've read about fishermen that caught squid that weighed over a ton. Did she talk about how that happens?
Not really, but she did mention some unusual cases. In 1933 in New Zealand, they caught a squid. Let's see here. It was 22 yards long. Its eyes were 18 inches across. Can you imagine?
Reminds me of all those stories of sea monsters.
Dr. Simpson thinks that there are probably even larger ones that haven't been found because squid are intelligent and fast, so they can easily get away from humans. Maybe some of those monster stories are true.
Questions 19 to 21 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 19. What topic are the speakers discussing? Question 20. Why does the man need to talk to the woman about the class? Question 21. What does the woman imply about sea monsters? Conversation 2.
The doctor should be able to see you in a few minutes. I just need some information from you first. What seems to be the problem?
Well, as you can see, I've got a rash on my hands and arms. I think it might be some kind of allergic reaction. My roommate just got a new cat. Maybe I'm allergic to cats.
Usually allergies to animals don't cause rashes on your hands.
Well, maybe I'm allergic to some kind of food, or...
When did you see your rash first develop?
On Monday. By Tuesday it was worse, and on Tuesday night I could hardly sleep.
Tell me, have you been out in the woods lately?
Out in the woods? I went hiking Saturday. Why? Oh, I get it. You think my rash might be caused by poison ivy, right?
Well, it looks like that. The doctor can tell you for sure. Do you know if you came in contact with poison ivy?
No, because I have no idea what poison ivy looks like.
It grows in clusters of 3 leaves, and the leaves are waxy looking.
Well, if I do have poison ivy, what can the doctor do for me?
He can prescribe a lotion that will relieve the itching, but if I were you, I'd go to the library and look for some color photos of poison ivy. and try to avoid it the next time I go into the woods. Questions 22 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 22. What is the probable relationship between the two speakers? Question 23. According to the conversation, when did the man go hiking? Question 24. What does the woman believe is the probable source of the man's problem? Question 25. What does the woman suggest the man do?
Section B. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1. The oldest stone buildings in the world are the pyramids. Some of the pyramids still look much the same as they must have been when they were built thousands of years ago. Most of the damage suffered by the others has been at the hands of men who were looking for treasure, or more often, for stone to use in modern buildings. Both the dry climate of Egypt and the very shape of the pyramids have contributed to the preservation of these old buildings, and months of pre-construction planning cannot be forgotten. The first thing taken into consideration by the Egyptians was to choose a suitable place. The step pyramids had to be on the west side of the Nile, the side on which the sun set. This was for religious reasons. It also had to stand well above the level of the river to protect against the regular floods. It could not be too far from the Nile, however, as the stones to build it needed to be carried in boats down the river to the nearest point. Water transport was, of course, much easier than land transport. The builders also had to find a rock base, which was not likely to crack under the great weight of the pyramid. Finally, it had to be near the capital, or better still, near the king's palace, so that he could visit it easily and personally check the progress being made on the final resting place for his body.
Questions 26 to 28 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 26. What causes most of the damages to the pyramids? Question 27. Why can some pyramids built thousands of years ago remain well preserved? Question 28. Why did the Egyptians build the pyramids along the banks of the Nile? Passage 2. Too often, young people get employment quite by accident. not knowing what lies in the way of opportunity for promotion, happiness, and security. As a result, they are employed doing jobs that afford them little or no satisfaction. Our school graduates face so much competition that they seldom care what they do so long as they can earn a living. Some stay long at a job and learn to like it. Others move from one job to another, looking for something to suit them. The young graduates who leave the university look for jobs that offer a salary up to their expectations. Very few go out into the world knowing exactly what they want and realizing their own abilities. The reason behind all this confusion is that there never has been a proper vocational guidance in our educational institutions. Nearly all grope in the dark, and their chief concern when they look for a job is to ask what the salary is like. They never bother to think whether they are suited for the job or, even more important, whether the job suits them. Having a job is more than merely providing yourself and your dependents with daily bread and some money for leisure or entertainment. It sets a pattern of life, and in many ways determines social status in life, selection of friends, leisure, and interests. In choosing a career, you should first consider the type of work which will suit your interests. Nothing is sadder than taking on a job in which you have no interest, for it will not only discourage your desire to succeed in life, but also waste your talents and ultimately make you an emotional wreck and a bitter person.
Questions 29 to 31 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 29. Why do many young people have difficulty in choosing a job? Question 30. Which of the following is the most important standard in choosing a career? Question 31. Which of the following would be the best title for this passage? Passage 3. The city of Singapore was not built up gradually, like most cities are, by the development of commerce on the banks of some river or on the crossroads of old trade routes. It was simply invented one morning by a man in the early 19th century looking at a map. Here, he said to himself, is where we must have a city, halfway between India and China. This will be the great stopping place on the trade route to the Far East. This man's name was Sir Thomas Stamford Raffles. Before the war, his bronze statue used to stand in Empress Palace. He was by no means the strong-looking individual you might have expected. Indeed, he was a rather vague-looking man in a long coat. Although people had once lived there, the island of Singapore, when he arrived, was largely deserted, except for a large quantity of rats and insects. There were also a great many human skulls and bones, which had been left by local pirates. He wasted no time, however, in buying the island from its owners, and then proceeded, his biography tells us, to set up a flagpole 36 feet high. As he stood there on that lonely beach, and looked up at the flag, with the rats and insects running all over his shoes, did Raffles foresee the wealth and prosperity which lay ahead for Singapore? Undoubtedly, he did.
Questions 32 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 32. What can we learn about Singapore? Question 33. What did Raffles find when he arrived in Singapore? Question 34.
What did Raffles think after he bought the island of Singapore?
Question 35. What can be concluded from the passage?
Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks numbered from 36 to 43 with the exact words you have just heard. For blanks numbered from 44 to 46, you are required to fill in the missing information. For these blanks, you can either use the exact words you have just heard or write down the main points in your own words. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written. Now listen to the passage.
Canada is a good example of peoples of different ways of life and different languages can live side by side under one government. The population of Canada has risen from 11.5 million in 1941 to 25 million in 1980. Most of the newcomers are from Europe, Asia, and the USA, so that today less than 44% of Canada's population is of British origin. 90% of Quebec population consists of French. There are some groups of French Canadians in Ontario and Manitoba, but the numbers are quite small. There are many Indians, Pakistanis, and Chinese, and also blacks from the USA, among the immigrants who are pouring into Canada now. Some Canadians are afraid that before long Canada will have more colored citizens than white. Other Canadians are disturbed by the growing racism in their country. Like so many other countries, Canada has only just begun to treat their own non-white citizens, the Eskimos and the Indians, as generously as they deserve. The Indian and Eskimo populations have grown quite a lot in the last few years. The government is at last realizing that it has a duty towards these people that it has neglected for so long. All Canadian children have to learn both French and English at school, but Francophones and Anglophones do not enjoy learning each other's language. Still, most Quebecois middle-class families living in Montreal are bilingual. They speak English and French equally well.
Now the passage will be read again. Canada is a good example of peoples of different ways of life and different languages can live side by side under one government. The population of Canada has risen from 11.5 million in 1941 to 25 million in 1980. Most of the newcomers are from Europe, Asia, and the USA. So that today, less than 44% of Canada's population is of British origin. 90% of Quebec population consists of French. There are some groups of French Canadians in Ontario and Manitoba, but the numbers are quite small. There are many Indians, Pakistanis, and Chinese, and also blacks from the USA, among the immigrants who are pouring into Canada now. Some Canadians are afraid that before long, Canada will have more coloured citizens than white. Other Canadians are disturbed by the growing racism in their country. Like so many other countries, Canada has only just begun to treat her own non-white citizens, the Eskimos and the Indians, as generously as they deserve. The Indian and Eskimo populations have grown quite a lot in the last few years. The government is at last realizing that it has a duty towards these people that it has neglected for so long. All Canadian children have to learn both French and English at school, but Francophiles and Anglophones do not enjoy learning each other's language. Still, most Quebecois middle-class families living in Montreal are bilingual. They speak English and French equally well.
Now the passage will be read for the third time. Canada is a good example of peoples of different ways of life and different languages can live side by side under one government. The population of Canada has risen from 11.5 million in 1941 to 25 million in 1980. Most of the newcomers are from Europe, Asia, and the USA. So that today less than 44% of Canada's population is of British origin. 90% of Quebec population consists of French. There are some groups of French Canadians in Ontario and Manitoba, but the numbers are quite small. There are many Indians, Pakistanis, and Chinese, and also blacks from the USA, among the immigrants who are pouring into Canada now. Some Canadians are afraid that before long Canada will have more colored citizens than white. Other Canadians are disturbed by the growing racism in their country. Like so many other countries, Canada has only just begun to treat their own non-white citizens, the Eskimos and the Indians, as generously as they deserve. The Indian and Eskimo populations have grown quite a lot in the last few years. The government is at last realizing that it has a duty towards these people that it has neglected for so long. All Canadian children have to learn both French and English at school, but Francophones and Anglophones do not enjoy learning each other's language. Still, most Quebecois middle-class families living in Montreal are bilingual. They speak English and French equally well. ¶¶